This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Yes, I know there's no pomp today and everybody's disappointed. I like to get that out of the way early. Part-time pomp is enjoying himself, however. I believe playing golf somewhere. I don't know if he's coming back today or tomorrow. I can't remember. My throat again today. I sure do miss him, no limits, but I'm glad to see you.
I do too, and I actually saw a shot of Bob at the course that he's at right now, and man, does he have a good swing on him.
Is it Pebble Beach? I think it might be. What do you mean he has a good swing on him? He sent out a video of his swing?
No, a buddy of mine showed it to me who works with Bob, and I saw his swing, and I was like, wow, I mean, no wonder why Bob golfs so frequently. The swing that he has is just so smooth.
You never said that about my swing.
I've never seen your swing.
It stinks. That's why. That's why my swing stinks.
Why does it stink?
Because I didn't play golf as a kid. And I just don't have the history, the bodily, mental, brain history of doing that. If I went to the foul line right now, I could shoot 100 free throws. And if I missed my first 20, I would be 100% confident that the 21st would go in. And I probably know why I missed every one of the other ones. In golf, I just hope. I swing and hope. There's nothing built into the cells of my being. You've seen me shoot free throws, right?
Yeah, it's almost automatic.
Yes. This isn't automatic.
Unless you're going up against me and Biba Cummings.
Yeah, remember that?
You missed your first two. I was stunned. That left the door open for us.
Limits, did we jinx the Pitt basketball team? What's their record since that day?
Well,
they did win at Syracuse right after that.
That was very early on in the season, too. That was in December.
Yeah.
Before they hit like the heart of ACC play. And they started off decent in ACC play.
Yes. I realize that, but they've been horrible, and I think you in particular jinx them for the rest of their season.
Probably. I'm the reason that Damian Dunn got hurt and Jalen Lowe hasn't been the star that we thought he was going to be this year.
I'm glad you can finally admit it. We have a lot on the table today. And as I was thinking about the show last night and this morning, here's what we mostly have. As I turn the camera to my horrifying face, but you can watch on 93.7thefan.com. Go to our YouTube channel. Man, there's a lot of things I don't get right now. Limits. Things I do not get is where we open today. Here's the first one. I just don't get, and Jerry Dulac wrote about it today at the Post Gazette, postgazette.com. Why Russell Wilson is still a candidate here to come back. Maybe I should get it. Maybe, as we've talked about in here, it's simply desperation. It's a marriage of desperation. I can't find anybody else who will even pretend to love me, so I'll marry you. Okay, I'm in the same boat. Let's set a date. That's the only thing I can think of. Nothing else makes sense. I don't get it. Russell Wilson faded down the stretch. He looked his age. I realized there were a lot of factors, but a quarterback is supposed to rise above those factors. He's supposed to lift his team past all of that. At least some of that. He didn't. He got dragged down by it. And I realized there were mitigating circumstances, like apparently, reportedly, he couldn't change calls at the line. But it seems obvious that the coordinator isn't enamored with Russell Wilson, and that Russell Wilson isn't enamored with the coordinator. It's a hard word when you try to say it twice in a row, Limits.
Especially saying it quickly.
Which is the same as saying he's not enamored with the head coach, at least not the way they run their offense to let Russ cook. Not to mention the fact that it seemed, sure seemed, like Russ indirectly shredded the organization and embarrassed them by his people possibly leaking that story. So what's the attraction here other than desperation? Dulac writes today, and I quote, Coach Mike Tomlin will spend 2 days each on both sides of the ball going over what improvements are needed for next season and which players, particularly free agents, will be retained or let go. Notice that Tomlin's the only person mentioned there, first of all. Another thing I do not get is with their continued lack of success, unless you consider 10-8 and getting blown out of playoff games successful, his power only seems to be increasing every year. I guess that's what you get when you're the fifth highest paid coach in all of sports, is that kind of power. Dulac goes on to write today that the Steelers have plenty of significant free agents, including quarterbacks Russell Wilson and Justin Fields and running backs Najee Harris and Jaylen Warren. So the most significant of those, as Dulac says, under the headline that basically this is a big week for the Steelers to map out their future, is which quarterback they want to retain. And he says it's a split decision internally, kind of like 2021 when the Steelers were deciding if they wanted to bring back Ben for his 18th season, which they eventually did. Well, we know from what Ben has said since then that Kevin Colbert did not want that to happen. Art Rooney did want that to happen, and Mike Tomlin was sort of in between, which is saying, to me at least, he was not thrilled with the idea, but going along with what Art wanted. So I ask you, Limits, we have a split decision internally inside the Steelers' offices on who to bring back as their quarterback. The decision makers, in order of power, to me, go like this. Art is one. Tomlin is 1A. And in certain situations, I would flip that because Tomlin is basically running the franchise. So I see Art, but Art has final say when he chooses to exercise it. Art 1, Tomlin 1A, Andy Weidel 2, Omar Khan 3 or 4, depending on how you look at it, and Arthur Smith 5. Those are all the guys who have voices in this quarterback situation, in this split decision. And I just wonder who stands where, don't you? Wouldn't you love to be a fly on the wall in these conversations with the Steelers split on Ben? And again, according or like they were on Ben, and according to Ben back then, it was Art is in my corner, Kevin Colbert decidedly not, Mike in between. Where do they stand now, I wonder?
I would have loved to have been one of the Hard Knocks guys where you know that they're not allowed to show everything, or, you know, in some instances, they're not allowed to show anything, like Deontay Johnson's feud, George Pickens not showing up to the game on Christmas Day on time. So I'd be curious to be one of those guys, but the overall power structure, it's going to be, I think, a Mike Tomlin decision at quarterback more than it's going to be an Omar Khan one.
What about an Art Rooney one?
I feel like Art's going to be a little bit hands-off, and, like, I don't know, like, that's just my personal opinion. And then he's going to let Mike and he's going to let Omar make the ultimate decision because he trusts in them and he doesn't think that any of the outside noise is so loud enough where it'll affect what happens inside. And what I mean by that is changing the power structure to let the GM do his job and Mike Tomlin stay in his lane.
Forget about that. Forget about that. It goes Rooney 1, Tomlin 1A, and they probably alternate positions. And I actually think Andy Weidel may have a more significant voice than Omar because Andy's a football guy.
And Omar's just a cap guy.
Andy Football, they call him, kind of like Donnie Football.
I don't know. I don't think we should undersell Omar as, like, you know, just the cap guy that I think a lot of people try to make him out to be.
Oh, really? You think he's a football guy?
Not as much as Andy Weidel is. But, you know, I don't think we should discredit, you know, Omar Khan's capabilities either. Andy Weidel,
I'm in between. I think we might want to do that. I'm sort of in between on Omar's tenure so far. Some good moves and some highly questionable moves. But for the purposes of this conversation, who stands where? Let's start with Art. Mark Cabali has said right on this station, and I quote, "I heard that maybe Art is more in favor of Russ than maybe the rest." Now, who has last call on this? Cabali said, "I don't know. I don't. How can it not be Art? He's the team owner. I don't think Art would stick his nose in and say we are taking Russ and forget about it. But I think they made it crystal clear, at least Art did to me, and I do believe him on this one. They want to bring one of them back, and I think it's going to depend on which option they have." Okay, so at least it sounds like Cabali saying that Art's in favor of Russ. So that's significant whether or not Art wants to stick his nose in it or not. If my boss came in here and said, "Hey, I'd love you to talk baseball in the next segment. I don't want to make your decisions for you, but I'm in favor of talking baseball in the next segment." Guess what I'm going to talk about in the next segment? Baseball. If Art lets it be known that Russ is his favorite here, then that obviously holds an awful lot of weight. That's what Cabali's saying. Art has said really nothing publicly other than, "Yeah, they're both fine," and I'm paraphrasing here. "They're both fine. I guess we'd like one of them to be the starter. They're both interested in coming back here. The quarterback room is wide open. We're going to look in the draft." I don't know what he said. He certainly hasn't committed to one. That's for sure. But we'll go with Cabali for now and say Art favors Russ. What about Mike Tomlin? Which one would you guess that he favors based on anything he's said and anything he's done? I'm going to go with Justin Fields because I think Mike Tomlin is, I'm not going to use the word enamored again, seduced by the idea of a running quarterback. And I think he thinks it's time. I think if you ask Mike Tomlin, you injected him with true serum, you went into these rooms and you were a little fly on the wall, you'd hear him say, "Let's go with Justin." But that's just a guess. I do not have cold or hard facts. I don't think anybody else does either, except for the people in that room. We've heard some things that he still favors Russ, that he loves Russ. He had a funny way of showing it late in the season. They completely put the handcuffs on Russell Wilson in the last game of the year against Cincy. They let a different quarterback throw one of the biggest passes, if not the biggest pass of the game, in Cleveland. And then I don't even know what happened in Baltimore, but I know I wouldn't have left that playoff game feeling great about Russell Wilson. So I'm going to go ahead and say that Mike Tomlin, I think, based on available evidence, would put the vote in for Justin Fields. So now we're down to Andy Weidel in my hierarchy, or it sounds like in yours, and Omar Khan. Who do you think Weidel and Khan would favor in this scenario? I'm going to say for Weidel, Justin Fields, because I'm going to bet he sees him as maybe a lesser version of Jalen Hurts.
I agree with that. I think the mobility factor of just the way that Eagles offense operated, and we know that Andy Weidel wants to build up this Steelers team in the trenches. And back to Tomlin briefly, like, I found it pretty fascinating when he said, like, when they ultimately made the move to Wilson and benched Fields, like, the idea, would you go back to Fields at some point? Like, if Wilson struggles, would you go back to him? And basically saying that, like, that's an end-all, be-all, like, if Russ gets benched, like, that's it.
Right.
Like, that is the
That's a good
that's
point
it.
And a good memory. He also did say, though, absolutely. You know, he left everything open.
Right.
But you're right. He did say that.
So that's what makes me think, based on the results of the final five games of the year, that Mike Tomlin would also prefer Justin Fields, because even though there weren't any more games, hypothetically, if there were another five, it probably would have been Fields' job at that point. Like, if it was the same thing that happened in, like, the middle of the season with Wilson that happened at the end of the year, I think they would have went to Fields.
He would have. I think so, too. I think he was going to live and die with Russ for the rest of this season, though. So I guess I disagree, actually, on that. I think it was Russ's show. Although, again, they had a funny way of showing, Tomlin did, how confident he was in Russell Wilson. All right. Then we get to other things I don't get. Well, that leaves Arthur Smith, and I think we know where he stands based on all his comments about Justin Fields and maybe indirectly Russell Wilson. I'm convinced that the votes would fall this way based on all available evidence. I don't know where Omar stands. I don't. So I'm going to have him as absentia. I'm going to go Art, Russ, Mike, Justin, Weidel, Justin, Artie Smith, Justin. What does that tell us?
Broncos country. Let's ride.
Well, other than that, that tells us that if Art, if that's true, if that scenario's true, that if Art wants to stick his nose in here, if he wants to be the boss and make the decision, from what Cabali says, he would say, you know what? We're bringing back Russell Wilson. And I got to tell you, I don't get it. I just don't get it. I was all for it last offseason. My eyes have seen what they've seen. I don't get it. And I'm not saying I think Justin Fields is the long-term answer either. But the position they're in, if I had to choose between the two, to me, I'd go with Fields. But here's something else I don't get. And I'd love to hear your opinions on this matter. Yeah, we've talked about the Steelers quarterbacks a lot. But as Dulac says, this is the week. This is it. They're mapping out their future this week. Where are we headed? Legal tampering starts on March 10th. We all know that illegal tampering starts way before that. So people like Fields, I would imagine, are getting a rough idea of what their market might be. So this is the week. This is the week that the Steelers' brain trust, such as it is, maps out their future. And I'm going to say and stick to the fact or the idea that it's going to be Justin Fields. I could be wrong. I was down to near zero on the idea of Russ coming back for obvious reasons. I read the Dulac story. I mean, the organization had to come out of that story totally fuming and totally embarrassed. And it seems very clear that the offensive coordinator doesn't want to let Russ play the way he wants to play. But I also understand the desperation factor. And if the owner wants him, that's a lot. Even if he doesn't stick his nose in, even if he doesn't exert his power, just knowing that Art favors Russ, if Cabali's right, that might be enough to bring Russ back. And I don't get it. And here's another thing I don't get. Oh, limitless wonder. This comes out of the Dulac story today as well. They got to make some decisions at running back. Of course they do. Warren is a restricted free agent. And Dulac says, you know, it'll cost them only $3 million or so as a right of first refusal offer. But then it comes to Harris. He says Tomlin has long favored Harris. Even though his career yards per carry average is nearly a yard lower than Warren's, Dulac writes, 3.9 to 4.8. I'll say it again, limits. I don't get it. He's long favored Harris. Then why in the last games of the year did Harris get 6, 9, 13, 12, and 6 carries? That doesn't sound like a guy the head coach favors. And I realize they fell behind, well, in pretty much every one of those games. but not behind enough mostly where they couldn't run the ball anymore. Not to mention the fact there's that weird issue of Najee being a captain as a rookie and then never being a captain again. And we know the head coach behind the scenes can and has manipulated that vote. Now, I don't doubt Najee's attitude, his desire, or his durability, but here's another part of why I don't get this, is his production. And, you know, back in November, I was arguing at the beginning of November that Najee should come back. 3 years, about $8 million a year. Seemed reasonable. Playing the best football of his career at that point. But I also pointed out in that story that my opinion, like all of ours, tends to fluctuate on Najee, and he soon backslid. And now we're left with a pretty big sample size of a guy who's had over 1,000 carries in his career. And the numbers are pretty paltry. 3.9 yards a carry with a long run of 37 yards. And I've said this 100 times in the last week.
You think I can name a couple of the running backs just based off memory?
Yes. Here are some lesser-known Steelers runners who averaged more yards a carry and had a longer run in their career than Najee does. And he's got over 1,000 carries. All of these guys top him on both counts. Higher yards per carry and at least one run longer than what Najee's had, which is 37 yards. Limits, I'll cross them off as you mention them.
Walter Abercrombie.
Very good, that's one.
Jonathan Dwyer.
That's two.
LeGarrette Blount.
That's three.
Foo.
That's four.
D'Angelo Williams, I think, is on that list.
That's five.
Oh, man, who else? There were some other just random names.
I can't remember if you named these people because I didn't write down what you just said. Did you say Tim Worley?
No, I did not.
Did you say Richard Huntley?
Very recognizable running back. Did not.
Did you say, you said Najee Davenport?
Did not say Najee Davenport yet. I was taking my mind on Najee Harris.
Ernest Jackson? Rodney Carter? Eric Pegram? Come on. I realize a lot of these guys had way fewer carries, and your yards per carry will go down the more you tote it. I get it. But Tim Worley, for God's sakes, had about a third the number of touches as Najee, and average more per carry with a longer run. You're telling me with 1,000 carries that Worley wouldn't have at least equaled Najee? He's not a home run hitter. He's durable. He's highly intense. He doesn't hit homers. You can get a lot of guys to do what he does and more. I don't believe in the saying that availability, your best ability is availability. I don't believe in that. Limits is available to be the Steelers' next quarterback. Does that mean he's a good choice?
I can play in the Turkey Bowl.
No offense. In three playoff games, Najee is averaging 2.77 yards per carry with no touchdowns. Running backs can be found everywhere. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers got Bucky Irving in the fourth round. He ran for 1,122 yards on 5.4 yards a carry and had at least three runs longer than Najee's career best. He's better. A guy they just took in the fourth round. So are lots of other guys. I think it's time me and everyone else, Mike Tomlin included, come to that conclusion. What are we doing? You're going to dump money, even relatively small running back money, into that? No, use it somewhere else. I don't get it. You know what else I don't get? This idea that the Pirates still have a big move in them. What and where? It looks to me like their lineup is set and their lineup stinks. And here's the other thing I don't get about that. What move are they going to make? But here's the other thing. Is Henry Davis really going to start in AAA? Don't you have to give this guy an opportunity at some point? Limits?
I think at this point, he is likely to be their backup catcher.
Over who?
Over Andy Rodriguez, and they're going to put him in AAA to start the year just to build him up. And
what about the human rain delay? Jason DeLay?
If Jason DeLay is stealing a spot from Henry Davis at this point, there are considerable issues.
They didn't sign a veteran to stash him at AAA.
Well, I mean, they've had DeLay in their system for a long time, and they can just easily DFA him and probably...
So if I asked you to bet right now, will Henry Davis be on this opening day roster, you're saying yes?
51 to 49, yes.
Okay.
Barely. Just barely.
I'm saying no. And on one hand, I do get it. He's has the word struggle doesn't begin to describe Henry Davis at the plate so far in his major league, in his brief major league career. But here's where I don't get it. Do you really have like hugely better options at the positions that he could play? I don't get why he didn't take reps at first base this offseason, at least some, so he would be available. I don't get why you're blocking him with a 38-year-old right-handed DH. You're telling the world you still believe in him. Of course, I guess you kind of have to say that, that there's no panic with Henry Davis. I don't get the whole Henry Davis pick at this point.
You know what they're going to argue? It gave us the financial flexibility to draft Bubba Chandler in the third round, and look how great he's going to become. But it's the number one pick in the draft.
I mean, when you're twisting logic to the point saying, hey, look what we did later on in a draft where we blew the number one pick, aren't we smart? Then you've reached a very bad place.
The number one pick in the draft. And it's just what is just so crazy to me where they can screw up the number one pick and they did in Henry Davis and then find the greatest pitcher on the face of the earth in Paul Skeens too with the number one pick.
I just want to find out once and for all. Maybe some people already think they know with Henry Davis, and I don't blame you if you think that. I don't. John Parrotto's been on with us and has said, man, it's hard to imagine this turning out well. But I'm all for, I think you almost have to. I think it's incumbent upon you. He spent a lot of time in AAA last year. He hits AAA pitching. I think he has to be on this roster and get some at-bats. Listen, if they had a really good team, if they had a good team and it was like, yeah, we can afford to stash this guy away. We're past the point of, quote, needing to find out about guys. I would get it. They don't have a good team. They don't. So find out about the guy. Maybe he'll surprise you. Offer him some confidence. Offer him a spot in the lineup, but everywhere he turns, he's blocked.
And isn't that what was so frustrating last year when the likes of Rowdy Tellez and other guys like the Brian De La Cruz, who they acquired at the deadline, some of these veterans, Yasmani Grandal, were taking at-bats away from younger players, taking it away from... like Billy Cook, Nick York, just to find out about them. I mean, at this point, they just need Jack Suwinski and Henry Davis to be on the roster at the start of the year.
I don't know about Jack Suwinski.
I
feel like I've seen enough with Jack Suwinski.
This is the last chance. This is your shot.
No, he should already be gone. Then why didn't they keep Brian De La Cruz? Is he worse than Jack Suwinski? He showed power.
I would have been completely fine with them bringing him back.
I wouldn't because he stinks, but compared to Suwinski.
He still hit 20 home runs when they acquired him in Miami. Like, he was awful when they acquired him, the worst of anybody that was acquired at the trade deadline.
He's the worst player in baseball. Well, other than Key Brian Hayes last year, Alika Williams, maybe Adam Frazier, maybe Rowdy Tellez.
Maybe Josh Van Meter.
They have all the have all the worst players in baseball. That's no way to build a lineup.
Drew Maggi.
I love Drew Maggi, and they should have kept him. Alika Williams had a higher average than Adam Frazier last year. Remember Gormy the Owl yesterday said there's hope with Adam Frazier. Do you feel that way?
No.
It's another thing I don't get.
If this was 5 years ago, Adam Frazier, as David Freese said, would maybe be in the race for a batting title. But right now, I want to see if he's in the Mendoza line batting title race at the moment, if he's going to make it there.
I mean, Brian Reynolds said it, and I noticed you used the quote on your show last night, which was wonderful entertainment limits.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm glad you listened. I'm surprised you didn't prank call me.
I did. I was going to call him. Well, I can't tell you what I was going to call in as, but I was. Yeah, to try and get back. I'm going to use it for next time.
Good. I didn't see it.
Brian Reynolds said in so many words at Pirate Fest, we have to have a set lineup with guys at their positions in the lineup all the time. They're not close to that. Every single guy here is like a multiple position guy. And they don't play all of them that great, and none of them can hit. It'd be wonderful to have a team filled with utility men if they were good hitters. None of them are. None.
They could make a, you know how everybody likes to critique Derek Shelton for changing up the lineup every single time. What if with all the utility guys, they just swung around the diamond every other game?
Like a volleyball team?
Yeah, like Isaiah Kiner-Falefa this inning, you're going to go to third. Keep you Ryan Hayes, try out shortstop.
You could seriously do that.
All right, next inning, rotate.
Limits, I think you've hit on something. This is one thing they could do, and they could do it in the middle of games. Start with catcher, and everybody rotate to the left. So, Endy's your starting catcher. Rotate. He moves to first. Your first baseman, who I don't know on a given day, could move to second. Gonzalez moves to short. Kiner-Falefa to third. And then you rotate your outfield as well. Yeah. I think you've stumbled on something here. The Pirates may be a very good volleyball team.
They're telling Brian Reynolds to go play in right field now instead of playing left field.
That's
he
right.
previously played center field.
The center fielder played shortstop, yeah. And the left fielder is a right fielder.
And Joey Bart could play first.
So as I've said, right.
Yeah.
That's what I think you've hit on it here.
Henry Davis can go back to right field. We know how much of an adventure
that was. Of course,
or
first base. So he couldn't be worse at different positions than some of the guys they have in there. I mean, it sure beats on any given day looking out at the diamond and after years of tanking and high draft picks and acquiring prospects with high ceilings. It's unbelievable to me that you can look out on the diamond on any given day and see a one-armed catcher, a one-armed first baseman, an underachieving second baseman, a shortstop who's not a shortstop, a permanently injured third baseman, a right fielder who's a left fielder, a center fielder who's a shortstop, a left fielder whose most notable hit in recent years was slapping Jock Peterson across the face after a fantasy football dispute, and then I haven't even gotten to the bullpen. That could be your lineup on a given day. I think you've hit on it.
Other than that, Mrs. Lincoln.
I think every inning, it would actually be entertaining. It would be something like Bingo Long and the Traveling All-Stars. Every inning, in the middle of an inning, the Pirates just rotate. And they move Endy. No, you're right. Joey Bart from catcher to first. Endy from first to second. Gonzalez from second to short. Kiner-Falefa from short to third, and then all the outfielders swap positions as well. You've hit on it, Limits.
And that is genuinely what has happened before. Like, Nick Gonzalez has played short. He came up as a shortstop.
Yes.
Kiner-Falefa has played third. Endy's played second in the minors.
Right. One of these decades, they'll have a team where everybody has one position, and they're pretty good at baseball, but not yet. Rotate!
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I don't know, Limits. Have we gone overboard the other way with the Four Nations hockey tournament now?
Well,
like, I'm excited for it. But in the end, I mean, you win on a Thursday night. Is the game Thursday?
Yeah.
In November, in a one-game situation with a team that was thrown together in 5 minutes in a tournament that doesn't include some of the best teams in the world. It's entertaining, don't get me wrong. I don't know that it's one of the most significant international hockey games ever played, and that seems to be the way that some people are building this up. I'm going to be entertained. I was more into it than most people going in, and now I feel like they're putting more on it than me. The tables have turned here, Wonder Twins.
So my expectations going into it were, all right, we're going to get some, you know, it's not like the Olympics. It's not anything in that high regard, but I mean, we're going to get some of the best suiting up with each other for something. It's a different alternative to the All-Star game. So my expectations were kind of minimal, and they've been completely exceeded. Like,
yes,
this is not a gold medal game, but at the same time, why can't we be excited and thrilled based on what
we can
already saw
Who
on
says
Saturday?
You can't? Who says you can't?
Well, I thought you were trying to bring it down a little
Absolutely not. I'm excited. I said I was excited to watch the game. I was the one excited going in when Pomp was saying, oh, Russia's not there. What does it really mean? I'm like, Bob, this is going to be great stuff. But now I feel like we flipped all the way over to this is one of the most significant international hockey games we've ever seen. Again, it's teams that were thrown together in 3 minutes playing on a Thursday night in November in a one-game situation in a tournament that included the United States, Canada, Russia, and Sweden in a round robin that lasted a week. I mean, what are we talking about here?
We're in February now, Joe.
Wherever. We're not in March yet?
You called it November.
Yeah, wherever we are. Whatever insignificant month of the NHL season we're in, of the hockey season. Having said that, it's going to be cool. I just don't know what it proves in the end.
Well,
does it prove? But I've said the same thing about the Olympics. That, you know, winning in those one game scenario, wait, that proves you're a better hockey country? I mean, on a given day, you were better. It's going to be fun. It's going to be intense, exciting hockey. But I think we're getting a little bit overboard here.
I try not to think too deep about it. And look, Russia should be in it. There's no doubt about it. Czechs should be in it as well. And maybe like a team of, like a conglomerate of other nations, like if they can't form a team themselves, should also be in it. Maybe they make it 6. Maybe they make it 8 at some point. Maybe it'll just turn into the World Cup of hockey, which we're going to get in 2028. But I digress. I feel like that, you know, this is the most exciting hockey tournament environment atmosphere we've had since the Olympics.
Yeah, like a breadcrumb would be your most exciting piece of food in a year if you hadn't eaten. I agree with that.
Right, I get
that. I totally agree with that.
And I get that argument, but why shouldn't we be at least a little bit excited?
I'm a lot excited for it. You're missing my point.
I am missing it.
Yeah, I'm a lot excited for it. I'm just not putting the importance, the significance of it to the level that I feel like a lot of people are at this point. It's going to be an awesome hockey game, more fun to watch than any Penguins game since Game 7 against the Rangers those years ago, and way better than probably a lot of NHL games I've watched in the last 10 years. It's going to be great. But the overall significance of it, what does it really prove or mean? That's my point.
Well, isn't it just a really good thing for hockey, though? Like, it's bringing significant eyes to the game?
No, they've been saying that since I started covering hockey in the 90s. This is the one that's going to really put eyeballs on hockey. No, it's not. Hockey is a niche sport that has a niche audience. How do you pronounce that word, Limits?
I think it's niche.
Yeah, niche sport. Well, with a niche audience, and nothing is going to change that. People, this tournament has become politicized. So like Caitlin Clark, you're going to have a lot of people who don't give a crap about hockey, who didn't care about it last Tuesday and won't care about it next Tuesday, who are going to use this game for political purposes, for sure. No different than Caitlin Clark. You know, people from all walks of life, from everywhere, use her as a political pawn, even though they couldn't care less about women's basketball. Couldn't care less about it. So you'll have that aspect to this game, but that won't carry over into anybody watching the NHL. Nobody.
No, and you know, I try to just, you know, keep the politics out of it. A lot of people watch sports for that plain purpose, to be a separator from everything else, but...
Yeah, impossible in this tournament, given the booing of the anthem the other night and the reasons that both sides would point to for that. It's already been politicized. You may not view it that way, but it's not a matter of choice in terms of whether this has, in fact, become politicized. It has.
No, I mean, the first 9 seconds of the game was a big part of that, with the Tkachuks making a point of emphasis to go out there and brawl against Canada, and, you know, after the booing of the anthem as well. I do feel like, though, and we know that hockey does not market its stars well enough, that there's really no issue with the amount of fanfare and favoritism that's been put on hockey right now, with the NBA All-Star Game going on, and that's, you know, just being an awful event right now. Baseball is just starting up. The NFL is done. I mean, it's a key moment for hockey to be able to capitalize. So I do agree with you that it should not be put on the same pedestal as the Olympics, but it's also a new event. It's a new fun event that clearly the players are passionate about. And the passion from the players that's been driven out has drawn passion from a lot of the fan bases. And as you mentioned, like, hockey's a very regional sport. Especially like Montreal, Toronto, Boston, Pittsburgh, Detroit, a lot of northern cities. Hockey's a lot bigger than it is in a lot of other parts of the country. But at the same time, I feel like it is still pretty good for the sport in this moment to be the most talked about of anything.
It's a nice thing to have in this particular moment. I do agree with that. For once, hockey gets a little bit of the center stage. But as far as translating to viewership and things like that for the actual NHL... I mean, my God, if anything, somebody who looked at this and said, wow, I've never seen hockey really before. This is incredible. And then tuned in next Tuesday for the Blue Jackets, you know, Red Wings game, is going to be awfully disappointed. I would say that.
Yeah, hockey, there's no doubt about it, needs to find a way to market their stars better, whether it's social media, commercials.
I know, that's been the talk for 30 years, though, bro. I mean, it's not happening. So if they marketed who? Who's like a really interesting, compelling, charismatic figure? It's not Connor McDavid. So if they found a way to better market him, then all of a sudden their ratings get better?
Now, is that a lack of effort? Is it a lack of trying? Is there just a lack of there not being a lot of interesting personalities at the NHL?
Maybe all the above. But if they had a Michael Jordan-like campaign, which we talked about with Sonny Vaccaro yesterday, you know, with Connor McDavid, I don't think it would translate to one more eyeball, or two. I think you go two at a time usually. Two more eyeballs on the league. I've just heard all that for so many decades, and it really hasn't added up to much. Having said all that, it's going to be a great game. I'm looking forward to it.
And I think a portion of that is because, I mean, think about Mario, kind of a quiet guy, Sid, quiet guy, Wayne Gretzky now on TV now, but you know, you don't think of him as the loud, flamboyant, on the red carpet like Patrick Mahomes, Peyton Manning, and Tom Brady are right now in the media. So maybe that is a part of it. But
it might be a part of it. You know, I think it's the sport in general.
Yeah.
I think for all the reasons football, nobody's going to touch football, but even like you look at ratings with other sports compared to hockey. And I'm just not sure it's ever really translated as a television entity, starting with the old fact that the puck's too small, like my dad always used to say. But in the meantime, we have plenty of time to talk about that. Listen to this show, the Pomp and Joe Show, every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. This is a huge week for the Steelers. Jerry Dulac headline, next season's major decisions loom this week for Mike Tomlin and the Steelers staff. We were talking about how Dulac says the room internally is divided over the quarterbacks and wondering who favors who. Art, Mike, Omar, Andy Weidel, Artie Smith. There's your five-man quintet. Who favors who in there, I wonder? Let's go to the lines, Limits.
Let's start with Adrian in the Berg, wants to talk some QBs.
What's up, Adrian?
Come back to me, Limits.
Go ahead, man.
Come back to me. I'll put me on hold.
What's happening?
Adrian, you're clicking.
You're clicking, Adrian. Adrian!
Let me try to fix that.
What's happening in his house?
It sounds like mass confusion.
Go to the next one, Limits.
Here is Anthony in Oakland.
What's up, Anthony?
You know, I have absolutely know who I want in favor of. I'm in favor of Justin Fields. Let me give you a comment that I heard Sean McVay make a couple years ago when he was losing Aaron Donald.
Yeah.
And this applies to the Steelers and the Pirates. He said, we either innovate or we stagnate. And unfortunately, the Steelers are in the stagnation mode because you want to innovate. Just like Baltimore did when they looked at Flacco and Jackson and said, we're going to innovate once we put Jackson in. And that's what they brought in Greg Roman at first, and he got to a certain level. Then they brought in that Todd Monken, and now he's at an even more extraordinary level.
What if I extend the choices for you, Anthony? What if, and it sounds like you're obviously wanting Fields here, and so am I if that's my choice, but what if I throw in the likes of Aaron Rodgers or Aaron Stafford, or Aaron Rodgers or Matthew Stafford? What if I throw those two guys in? Is that us or Anthony's phone that's screeching like that, Limits? What's happening here?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Look, then we've become the Indianapolis Colts after they lost Andrew Young. Luck. I don't want to get these old geezers close to Social Security retirement. I want a young 25-year-old.
Well, they're not going to get their Social Security anyway, but go ahead.
You should be able to grow this man. If you can't grow a quarterback who was a first-round pick, he was so good at Ohio State, they allowed the quarterback for Cincinnati to go to LSU. I mean, come on here, Steelers. I mean, what's going on here? Are you so inept that you can't develop anybody anymore?
Thank you, Anthony. Very passionate man, isn't he, Limits?
He always is.
Let's go to the next call.
Here is Seth in Long Island, wants to talk some QBs.
Hello, Seth.
Hey, Joe, how are you today? Austin, thanks, man. So, again, talking quarterbacks, bottom line, man, I'm a Justin Fields guy. I still am perplexed as to why he got benched. He had one turnover, right, in six games. Yeah, I know he had five fumbles, but they recovered them. Bad exchanges between the quarterback and center. He had 10 touchdowns, right, starting. Wilson had a hell of a lot more turnovers. You need a 25-year-old. You need a guy that's mobile. And if he covets a mobile quarterback, why would you streak right before the Wilson? Why didn't they bring him in? They were going to burn all the boats. Why didn't they bring him in against Cincinnati? Let him play, get the rust off, and you know you get
right.
A pitcher that gets you get a pitcher that gets knocked for seven runs in the first inning. You take him out, right? Why didn't Fields get back in? Tomlin made a huge mistake by going for the pole position, promising in the pole position. And if you remember, Joe, bottom line, man. Justin Fields should have been at least 5-1, right? The vaunted defense gave up a game-losing touchdown to the Cowboys.
Yeah, I don't want to mistake my opinion that I'm enamored with Justin Fields.
I understand that.
Definitely not. But he could have been 5-1. He also could have had some ruinous turnovers and should have had probably some ruinous turnovers in his last two starts, which weren't very good. And that was Dallas and the Raiders. Two games they won. Or no, they lost to Dallas. They beat the Raiders. In the loss to Dallas, he had an interception. The guy, right in his hands. It looked like it looked like the Jameis Winston throw to Kyle Hamilton against the guy dropped it. He also had a horrendous lateral in the Raiders game. It looked like a Kenny Pickett pass, one of those ones behind the line of scrimmage, like a worm burner that could have been picked up and run for a touchdown. Then at the end of the half in that game, which is when I thought he was going to get pulled, and I think he might have been pulled if this ball, if this interception counted, you remember Fields threw his worst pass of the season right before the half against the Raiders. It gets picked off in Raiders territory, but a roughing the passer call that had no impact on the throw bailed him out. He only completed barely 50% of his passes in those last two games. However, given the choice here, I think he'd still be my choice. But what's going on at Steelers headquarters?
Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.